I am Bill Martinez. It's 28 minutes before the top of the hour, and glad we could have Bruce Thatcher join us. Bruce has written many books on the issue of immigration and history. Of course, for many times he's been on the show, we talked about immigration, how to avoid its perils and make it work. He's the founder of History Speaks Today, a project dedicated to sharing lessons learned from history to help us avoid making the same mistakes. In his book that we've talked about with Bruce many times, goes beyond partisan rhetoric and shows how to effectively deal with America's immigration system. And, of course, he has a brand-new book out, The Rise and Decline, Where We Are and What We Can Do About It. Bruce Thatcher, good to have you with us. I'm Bill Martinez Live. How are you?
Good to be here, Bill. Shed some, or try to shed some light on some of the problems of the day.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, you know, it was announced here, you know, as we were discussing more, and the country's been dealing with sanctuary cities. You know, what are we going to do about it? And the sanctuary cities' response was, you know, hey, we're going to double down. In fact, we're going to tell you what our goal is. We're going to make 1 million immigrant citizens in 2017. What do you think about them apples, right?
Yeah. Well, actually, it's worthwhile looking at, even looking at the number. That's a little bit of a stretch from what naturalization has been. In 2015, about 730,000 immigrants were actually naturalized. So these the naturalization now and the sanctuary cities say they're going to try to raise that to 1 million. Mm-hmm. That's a 33% increase, but it's been that high before.
Right. It's been as high as 1.3 or something like that. I thought we had some sort of allocation of about 1 million plus or minus in terms of allotted immigrants, come into the country illegally, legal immigrants.
We have a whole confusing cluster of allocations that actually come to maybe 500,000, half a million through various channels, except for family. And families unlimited, and that runs more than half a million every year.
Mm-hmm.
But once they get here, an immigrant has to have become a legal permanent resident, an LPR, get a green card, and has to hold that green card for at least 5 years before they can apply for naturalization.
Mm-hmm.
Naturalize Now says that there's 8.8 million people who are eligible to be naturalized, and I presume from that, by eligible, they mean that these are people who have had green cards for more than 5 years.
Mm.
So they're going to try to get 1 million of those naturalized this year through the procedures and everything. That's kind of a stretch. That's a healthy increase, and if you're setting sales goals, well, you set them high, I guess.
Yes, right. Yeah, well, and you have something there to take credit for, so you can be able to say, hey, look, we got the number, you know, we conflated the number. But basically, what they're drawing from is a universe of people that are already in the queue. But you would, you know, unless I'm misunderstanding something here, Bruce, the way it came out to me was like they were going to take these illegal immigrants who have scrambled to the front of the line, you know, through this sanctuary city process. And because if people are here legally and they have a green card and, you know, there's no need for them to deal with sanctuary city status, right?
Well, that's the way I see it, and that's the way you see it. They probably, many of them probably feel more comfortable in sanctuary cities just because like tends to group with like.
Mm-hmm.
So they try to be with people they know and everything. But let me tell you how this, as near as I can tell, I got looking into it, how this came about. On July 4th, of course, mm-hmm. Naturalize Now announced this program to naturalize 1 million immigrants. And almost instantly, mayors of 21 of the sanctuary cities announced support for the program. Of course, there's like 200 sanctuary cities, so I don't know where the rest are.
Mm-hmm.
And within only a couple of days, some reporter somewhere inserted the word illegal into the story.
Mm-hmm.
So then that rose to the headline on news agencies that just pick up from other news agencies, and that became the announced goal. I think that illegal part of that story is not correct.
Mm.
And when you take the illegal out of it, it becomes a much less significant story. So I think maybe Naturalize Now has been happy that somebody did that.
Right.
And got them all that publicity.
Yeah, but the problem is when you get that, then you have resistance coming in because, it's a form of propaganda and fake news. I mean, it's not even genuine.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The bloggers can bloviate on it. The talking heads can just go on forever talking about how everybody is for or against immigrants and illegal immigrants. It's just unrealistic. What is realistic is the naturalization of people and illegal immigrants, unless there's something I don't know, whether they come to the head of the line they're usually talking about is to get into the country and get that green card.
Right.
But they still have to wait 5 years to get naturalized. So we're back to the question of what is the government doing about controlling who can come in the country and get a green card? And I think that's a different topic for discussion, but very important one.
Without a doubt.
Once they get the green card, then they got 5 years to wait.
But Bruce, let's go back and discuss the qualifier here, which is clearly the difference between somebody who comes in legally and illegally. Someone who comes in legally has to be sponsored so that they are not an encumbrance and a liability to the state or the community in which they happen to reside in. Whereas if you're illegal, now thank you very much, some of the political operatives have made it such that unbeknownst to we the people, we have become the sponsors of these illegal immigrants. So we, in a sense, are our own co-conspirators for the very thing we don't want to happen. Am I reading something wrong here?
I think that's a correct analysis of it, really, because illegal immigrants are, at least in the efforts of many advocacy groups, illegal immigrants get a preference on almost everything. A highly disproportionate number of them are on welfare or on some sort of state-supported substance. They are in the schools. They put a load on the social services. Call me a racist. They commit a higher proportion of crimes than American citizens do. So it's a real issue. But back to the immigration thing, unfortunately, there is a significant effort to push them to the top of the preferences and get them ahead of people who've gone through all of the processes of getting in here legally. And I think that's something that I hope is going to change pretty soon with this Congress and this president.
Well, this thing is wrong on so many levels, as you say, because they come in illegally, they go to the head of the line, they're getting more benefit than somebody who comes legally, and, and they're part of an underworld, because if there's a problem, it's not like they can dial, call the police and ask for help, because they're here illegally, so then they have to rely on the neighborhood justice and whoever's commanding that zip code at that particular time. Bruce Thatcher is with us. We've got more from Bruce. We're talking immigration. We're talking sanctuary cities right here on Bill Martinez Live. It's just about 18 before the top of the hour. The author of the book Rise and Decline, Where We Are and What We Can Do About It, is our guest. Bruce Thatcher examines the history of four expired nations to validate the premise that rejection of the basic values on which a nation is founded leads inexorably to decline and extinction. Rise and Decline then applies those lessons to two existing nations that are in decline, notably the United Kingdom and the United States of America. Bruce Thatcher, we're talking illegal immigration. We're talking sanctuary cities. Well, I'll tell you, there's enough evidence out there, but yet the debate continues. It's like we're mired in a bucket of gum.
the debate continues. I hardly even call it a debate. The the argument continues. An example is the recent Texas bill, which is known as SB 4 here in Texas, which has passed and will become law on September 1st, and it effectively bans sanctuary cities. Now, you would think from the reaction to this that we had just killed the Constitution of the United States. But what it does is, what makes a city a sanctuary city essentially is that they say they're not going to cooperate with any enforcement of immigration law. So illegal immigrants can come to those cities and feel safe from apprehension for being illegal. Of course, that makes them vulnerable to a lot of criminal elements in their own area, as you mentioned earlier. What SB 4 does in Texas, it has a number of provisions that are fairly innocuous, but it has two provisions that are very significant. It requires law enforcement agencies in the state at all levels to honor ICE detainers issued for violent criminals. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing that's getting everybody. I mean, there have been suits filed in court on it by cities. There have been suits filed even by the Mexican government against it. It has another provision that I think has not been talked about, but I think is one of the most significant things. It has teeth because it requires all law enforcement agencies to enforce the law, and it imposes penalties and can actually lead to jail time and removal from office of officials who refuse to comply with the law. This is borrowing a provision that has existed in Singapore for many years, and that is that the people in charge of immigration law or having an effect on it are subject to penalties if they don't do their job.
What a novel concept, right?
Yeah, and other states are considering similar kinds of laws. Well, this is, you know, the scream and outrage in Texas, at least, about this from some cities and from, as I mentioned, the Mexican government about how absolutely awful this law is just astounding.
Well, the Mexican government, why, I mean, what, why do they even have standing?
Well, I don't know why they have standing. In late June, they filed a sworn statement with the U.S. District Court to argue why the law should not go in effect. They have 11 consulates in Texas who counsel Mexican citizens who are in Texas, and they're saying that this law makes it more difficult for them to look out for the Mexican citizens who are in Texas. And they go into great detail as to why they think that is. But, you know, I don't know the legalities of it, whether they have standings, whether they can actually sue. I don't think they can actually sue. But they can obviously file their opinions.
Yeah, and they're working the system because here they've got people who are compatible that are willing to stretch the law, break the law, you know, for their interest. So they have a common interest there because, you know, what's in it for Mexico anyway? But, what, about $20 billion worth of money that goes back into Mexico from, people who are working here?
That's right. And my opinion is that Mexico does not want the people back who are currently in the United States illegally.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a profit center. Why would you want that? You know,
it is.
You know, in a sense, they're kind of non-designated slaves to the system, and you know, and if a couple of them get out and they become citizens, you know, no big deal because we got plenty to, you know, replace them with, and it just, you know, it's like this, you know, the vacuum's not going to exist, so it's going to fill space, and you know, we just continue on as business as usual. And now, meanwhile, because it has been going on for so long, even law enforcement has kind of just surrendered to it and just said, okay, it's a matter of life. We'll just, you know, we'll manage the illegal problem. How does that make sense?
Yeah, and I think things are going to change after September to some degree in Texas because of that and by other states. Everybody who's taken a position in this thing, of course, is looking out for their own interest. Mexico has an economic interest in it, perhaps. The cities who are sanctuary cities clearly have a political interest in it, because even if the illegals that they're protecting can't vote, certainly they express an opinion that has the immigrant community tending to be in their favor and keep them in office. So it is a mess that has to be cleaned up.
Mm-hmm. Well, they need to come up with something, you know, to replace the old system, even though this has kind of been a system that's won by default. You and I have talked about this before, Bruce. I think one of the solutions would be that what you do is, okay, the United States needs workers. All right. We need to lease those workers from the Mexican government. Empower the Mexican government and say, look, this is who we're going to hire, and we're going to pay the Mexican government just like any other company that would come in and say, here's our employee base, and we're going to make them available to you. And they cover their health care, and it's all part of the payment, all this kind of stuff. And we negotiate with the government for employees, kind of like the Bracero program years ago,
yeah,
the way it used to operate. Right?
Years ago, we did.
Yeah.
We didn't do all of those particulars, but that's essentially the way we dealt with the problem.
Exactly. And so, you know, but that seems too common sense and too reasonable to do that, because the thing is, I look at it this way. You begin to set up a win-win-win scenario. The labor's got work to do. They're going to get paid. The government now has an interest. I'm talking about the Mexican government. So now they see that as an asset. Oh, my goodness. Is that going to cause them to want to monitor the border, their side of the border, a little bit more closely to make sure that their asset doesn't escape, you know, through some of the cracks and the holes, because there's lost revenue there.
Mm-hmm.
And so this will make them a little bit more diligent. And I think that's where, you know, Trump gets his wish and his vision of Mexico participating in building the wall will come through, because Mexico is going to participate one way or another. Either they're going to be surcharged, they're going to be taxed, you know, and help pay for the wall. I mean, there's different ways to pay for it. Or they can say, hey, we're going to come alongside and we're going to participate in building the wall, because it makes for good neighbors and it's good for both sides.
I think that's so clearly obvious, and you might wonder why so many people don't like or say they don't like to do that kind of a thing. And I think the answer gets down to self-interest,
yeah,
of all of the advocacy groups. How does that enhance their position? And unfortunately for them, it doesn't enhance their position, so they're against it.
Well, the problem is, whenever you get government, it's kind of like we were just talking with a friendship expert a moment ago, Bruce, you know, and when you get people together, you know, who they'll find a way to become reasonable. They'll just say, hey, it's not tenable, you know, so let's be reasonable. And they'll come to an answer. But when you get the government involved, they got a social engineer, they got to get credit, they've got to create a bureaucracy. When it's real simple, you know, people just go, hey, you know, this will be a quid pro quo kind of deal. We'll work it out. It's win-win for everybody. You like it? I like it. Hey, let's do it. Let's go make it happen. It's just so much easier, you know.
Why couldn't we do that always?
Well, because we have a government that wants to operate outside of its purview. It was never designed to do all this stuff. It's like healthcare right now. I mean, we're looking to the government to solve health. That's not what they're for. You know, it's the wrong. My dad used to always say, you got to make sure you get the right tool for the right job. And so often, and especially now with all these activists, Bruce, as you know, even with these sanctuary city likes, they bring in the government to weaponize their interests. And
that's
so
right.
We're fighting all these weapons all over the place with the full force and power of the government, utilizing the IRS, FBI, you name it, ICE on down the line. And to what end? I mean, just to create more conflict instead of coming to a resolution to where it's win-win for everybody, like you just said.
And all of that serves the interests of a huge bureaucracy, because the ability to say no at every stage of the game gives them individuals a sense of power. They can say no, they can't say yes, so they're saying no.
And so the question is, what happened to a government of, for, and by we the people?
Well, I'm afraid, as I point out in Rise and Decline, I'm afraid we're getting away from that very fast.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, we've been on a downhill run here against that for a long time. And those citizens who think that the bureaucracy is what they need and it's Big Daddy taking care of them, Lord have mercy, you know, and it's going to require the rest of us who know better to, first of all, like they tell you on the airplane, put the oxygen mask on yourself first. Get yourself squared away, and then you can take care of your neighbor, right?
That's right.
Yeah, because your neighbor, guess what? Your neighbor's going to be looking for help here. If they're not already, trust me on this. They're going to be looking down the line. Rise and decline, where we are and where we can, what we can do about it. Bruce, where is it available real quick? 5 seconds.
Amazon.com.
Just that simple. And linked on our website at BillMartinezLive.com. Thank you, Bruce.